I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show.
Natural disasters,
and eventually, the end of the world. Welcome to the weekend edition. Jeff Deal is here, and futurist Jaime Cascio is back with us. And before we start, I've got to let you know that we will be away for a week doing our patriotic duty as Americans by fucking off completely on or near the fourth day of July. And Jaime is going to lead us off in this conversation.
Oh, hi, how are you? Hi, Jeff.
Yeah.
Glad to be back here. I don't know if you noticed, I put in hearing aids at the beginning of the session today.
I couldn't notice,
They're a little insert into the ear canal. You can't really see them very well. But I got hearing aids recently because I've had a degradation in my hearing. It's congenital. It'll get worse as I get older. Got me thinking about what it means to have these kinds of therapeutic prosthetics, because it turns out that the technologies around prosthetics are getting so much better that, at least in some cases, people who have options of doing rehabilitation versus having like a leg amputated and replaced with a prosthetic are starting to opt for the prosthetic instead of rehabilitation. There is a South African runner who was born without feet, has carbon fiber lower leg prosthetics, that is a track and field star, is in contention for the 2008 Olympics, would qualify, except the International Olympics Committee
considers it an unfair advantage.
Considers it unfair. And it's not because he's so much better. Actually, there isn't enough energy in the carbon fiber, in his carbon fiber legs, to really make him, you know, gold medal, you know, a medal winner. But the IOC recognizes, and I have to say, I had to give them props for this. They recognize that this is a technology that's getting better. And it may not be this guy in 2008, but somebody in 2012, maybe, definitely by 2016, you'll have people who can run faster on prosthetic legs.
You may have super hearing. And
actually, I could get these hearing aids set. Not legally, as it turns out, but technically I could get them set to give me better than human hearing. And this is the thing. We're moving into this world where the technologies that have been devised for the therapies around disability have now gotten good enough that they're actually moving the people who have, you know, quote-unquote, below normal bodies, below normal capabilities, giving them the ability to be better than human. And start to ask the question, what is that, you know, how does that change our relationships with our bodies? How does it change our relationships with each other? If I'm looking at you and I don't know that you have a prosthetic of some sort, but it turns out that prosthetic gives you something that I could never do with a natural body.
I can imagine people trying to get diseases and have accidents and so forth, so that they can get the replacements legally. I mean, because there's always going to be that dividing line between, or maybe there won't always be, but the idea is that enhancement for its own sake is not allowed. But if there's a problem, then you can have enhancements.
We see an interesting example of that with a drug called modafinil. Are you familiar with that?
I'm intimate with it.
Yes. It is something that was developed originally in France for narcolepsy in the late 1990s.
Yeah.
But what it does is it keeps you awake, and it keeps you awake without any kind of weird side effects. And it has, at least in my experience, and I know that they've done testing with people being awake for, you know, over 72 hours. Yeah. I've never gone past 30 with it. But it's one of those things that's gray market if you don't have narcolepsy.
Right.
And why is it gray market? Because it's not used in a therapeutic way. If you're using it to keep yourself awake for business or to avoid jet lag, you're using it to make yourself better than the people that you're competing with in business or competing with politically.
Now, you're a person who, through world changing and so forth, you have some interaction with people who would define themselves as environmentalists, and there's a great portion of that sort of political spectrum of attitudes and ideas, the people who see themselves as naturalists, and what's natural is good and what's unnatural is bad, and then have this very sort of simplistic definition of those boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Do these people have anything whatsoever to say to us? Is there a dialogue there that's even worth having?
Well, there's always the dialogue is always worth having, if only right. to help you refine your own perspective.
Right.
I think that an argument that humans should avoid the unnatural is inherently bankrupt, because we haven't avoided the unnatural for several thousand years.
Right. I mean,
cities are among the first forms of technological augmentation of humankind, because with a city, you know, with the advent of cities and with the kind of social stratification and division of labor that emerges from the urban social structure, humans became able to do things that they could never do before. And we see this time and again. I have a line that I like to throw out every now and then, that technology is anything invented after you turn 13. And mm-hmm. you know, we sometimes forget that things that are so intimate to us, that we're so familiar with, are things that actually should be considered technological augmentations. And I think the same thing will happen with these kinds of interesting prosthetics, whether we're talking about pharmaceutical or digital. We see them now as scary and weird and as unnatural, but the generation that's growing up, who will grow up with these as commonplace, will be the ones who see this as just as natural as electricity yeah. and artificial light is for us.
On the other hand, I mean, when the electricity goes off in New York City, it's a disaster.
Yeah, and that's the big...
And we're reliant on these things.
That's the big twist about technological augmentation, is that you become dependent upon them to be able to do what you want to do. And whether you're talking electricity or talking about urban stability.
Sure. You know, I mean, a lot of us are probably already beyond our expiration date in terms of how whether we would survive in the wilds.
Oh, yeah. I know I couldn't.
Yeah, right.
I don't even like to go camping.
Well, just to swing it back to the athletic competition
sure.
area, because you know, I could foresee there being some sort of implant for, say, children who have been found to have some genetic predisposition for arthritis, for instance, and maybe mm-hmm. there's an implant that you can put into a child's joints that somehow counteracts the you know damage of arthritis, but then also as a byproduct, actually makes those joints stronger than the person who doesn't have the implant, but
mm-hmm.
it happens later in life. So, I mean, you know, this person grows up as an adult, and it's like, why should they be discriminated against because they've got something in their knee from childhood, you know, even beyond just like, I don't have any feet, I'm going to strap these things on right now and run in a race, but like, it's just always been there. And why not? Why couldn't you just come up with like a handicapping situation, so to speak, where like you mark a certain...
Well, this is going to be a really big question, not just for the issues around physical prosthetics, but around gene doping.
I mean, sure.
we're probably, if we don't see gene doping scandals in 2008, we will see them by 2012. And the big issue around gene doping is that unless you have a baseline read of somebody's genome, you're not going
to... Talk about exactly... what that is in terms of how it would be used.
Well,
in
the people who look into gene doping, which is basically the insertion of genes that you weren't born with
right.
into your physiology and making them active, the most likely scenario is are genes that improve your ability to use oxygen efficiently,
mm-hmm.
to increase the efficiency of oxygen consumption.
How are those genes injected, just like really simplistically? Is it they have stem cells or something, or how do
they... You know, I don't know if I could explain it very, very quickly, but basically it's painful and difficult. And,
oh, yeah.
and the reason that I'd say we might see it by 2008 is because it hasn't really been perfected in a way that's mm-hmm. reliable.
Right.
But they're getting better at it. They're getting really good at it in China. Mm. And so...
And they don't mind a little pain.
Well, it becomes a question then of... do we even want to, you know, can we even consider the Olympics and other kinds of competitive sporting events as being a bastion of natural skill anymore? mean, at what point do we have to just basically throw up our hands and say, okay, we're going to have the natural Olympics and we're going to have the augmented Olympics where people can run faster and jump higher and, you know, fly if they want to.
Or just admit that it's a technology contest or a combination of skill
and it becomes
technologies.
Like, you know, it becomes like a
auto maker racing. Fair.
Well, some kind of mashup between maker fair and auto racing where right. it's really has nothing to do with, you know, very little to do with the person, you know, behind the wheel and a lot more to do with the technicians who built the car.
And you can imagine the evolution of technology could be really juiced up by these kinds of competitions.
Oh, sure.
It's an incredible motivating factor.
Oh, and then you guys start to get into the really weird scenarios around sponsorship. My jeans brought to you by Monsanto. Or worse still, like what's the genetic and cyborg equivalent of digital rights management? You know, do you want to have, you know, the gene doping that?
Well,
actually,
that's already having come up in terms of people exploiting the genome of people who don't know about it in third world countries. And
yeah,
so
but that's you know, there are issues around you know, genetic property theft. But I'm talking about things like being able to insert a code, which is entirely possible, by the way.
Right.
Insert a code into a gene that says, okay, this won't reproduce unless you get this associated chemical.
Right.
There's actually, they call them artificial chromosomes, that you can actually do some really interesting work with adding.
Basically a key, an encryption key or something.
Exactly. And so suddenly.
And it's like Johnny Mnemonica's or something like that.
Where it becomes very cyberpunk or biopunk where, you know, I want to have, or do you really want to have genetic rights management where you have to get a license from your, you know, from the creator to reproduce?
It only works for, you know, 30 days and you have to buy another.
DRM-free, yeah. Gene insertion.
Yes, children is shareware.
Let's move on to something a little bit more mundane. there was another G8 summit last month in Germany, and of course all the A-list countries were there in attendance. And as usual, tens of thousands of anti-globalization protesters were also there. This time it was in Rostock,
fucking
Germany.
Hippies.
Damn. Sorry. Hippies. And there were demonstrations, street theater, and rioting by anarchists, topping it all off, or presumed anarchists. And so my question for today's panel is, all this right on, have these events become a cliche? And what does it mean when protest becomes a lifestyle? Anybody have any thoughts on this?
What are these guys like on tour all the time? They're like going around.
They do. Yeah, I mean, this
things.
Is exactly. This
where are we going this year? We're going.
This is exactly it. I mean, I think there are social circles where, you know, just like in some social circle, please, everybody says, are you going to Burning Man this year? Mm-hmm. Or everybody says, are you going to the Dead Show or the Math Convention? There's a social circle where, are you going to the G8? Yeah. Are you going to...
At least it's not like... At least they're doing something disruptive, whereas, like, you know, these things that we call protests...
That's an interesting bit of phrasing there, because at least you're doing something constructive. No, at least you're doing something disruptive.
Oh, mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that any kind of protest or anything is completely without balls unless it's disrupting something, not either by property damage or violence, something. I mean, the kind of protest that you see here in San Francisco, for instance, where everybody goes to City Hall with their nuclear family and their dog and they have a picnic on a lawn and listen to some douchebag celebrity talk about how pissed off he is, it's so ridiculously meaningless, you know, and the only time that the media pays attention to anything, any kind of a protest, is if there's property damage or violence or some kind of, you know what I mean, business disruption.
Yeah, it becomes a media show at that point.
I mean, and it has to be. And then that's really the point, right? I mean, you're not going
to this tactic isn't interesting to people anymore. Right. It was interesting once in Seattle, and now it's become part of the same spectacle the demonstrations are.
You know,
everybody knows it's going to happen, right. And they know that the little anarchists are going to come with their masks, and they're going to.
Well, within the last time they use water cannons to break up the crowd, though.
That was
amusing to me for about 30 seconds.
Goes into the media sphere and has no.
It gets on the Daily Show, and Jon Stewart tells a joke, and then it goes away.
Right.
Well, you know. I think that kind of activity has become as cliched as the hey hey ho ho insert problem here has got to go.
No.
That kind of
but you know
chanting.
What? It's only a matter of time until somebody sets off a bomb or does something significant enough to get media attention. Property damage and violence will always get news if it's big enough.
I mean, setting off a bomb won't have any. real results. I mean, if a riot is effective, it's effective because a lot of people are participating in it.
Right.
And people look at that sort of like during the Vietnam War.
A bomb won't have any results? What do you mean?
Well, the question is,
What
are you trying to
and any positive
effect?
Results.
Are you trying to just get attention for the sake of getting attention, or are you trying to actually make a political change?
Part of the philosophical argument that happened around the Battle of Seattle was, you know, you had a small, tiny minority of black bloc anarchists who shattered windows and engaged the cops. And the rest of the progressives were like, oh, no, play nice. And but in the aftermath, people were talking, well, what did you accomplish? You didn't accomplish anything per se, but people started talking about what is this globalism thing and why is there an opposition to it? So
I think they actually succeeded in creating some kind of dialectic and you know, even within people who are involved in globalism, that might have led to the cancellation of debts and so forth. Sure. But again, I think it's just a tactic that, you know, gets repeated and
well, there is a strategic argument for progressives in thinking about this kind of activity, and that is as long as that kind of activity at protests is there, the peaceful progressives can say, look how bad it could get. It's right. Why we're the reasonable
right.
ones.
Right.
And whereas
there's
without,
that dynamic between Martin Luther King and Malcolm X
sort of
thing.
Well, the other, I guess one of the other issues is too, that especially that the anarchists complain about after one of these, you know, major confrontations is that, oh, look, we're the ones that stepped up and became the targets of the authorities, took the beating. And then all of you, like, you know, university professors came in afterwards, denounced our violence, but then took advantage of the media spotlight that was put on to the issue and say on one side of your mouth saying, oh, we're against what these anarchists did, but on the other side benefiting from, you know, from the exposure.
I mean, I'm sort of interested just from my own experience in the early 70s as a yippie and someone who chased around demonstrations and riots for 3 or 4 years, that being part of a cohort group like that kind of makes you stupid after a while, and because you're just doing the same things, and you're really not figuring out how to do anything creative. I mean, you're not making anything.
How's that? I mean, what is the alternative, though? I mean, anytime you have an organization that, you know, has a consistent mission and consistent tactics, you're going to run into that. Mm-hmm. It becomes a lifestyle. How do you prevent it?
I don't know if you can prevent it. I do think that it then goes back to the question of what's the point, and not
what is it
and
only
not in the I don't mean that in the sense of saying, well, why, you know, why do anything, but in the sense of you're trying to create a particular outcome. The world that we're in today is not the world of battle in Seattle anymore. And I don't mean just in terms of the attention to globalization, but I mean in terms of the various media outlets and the channels available to protesters, to people who have a message. Mm-hmm. I think the rise of the collaborative web, we were talking about, you know, blogging and wikis and, you know, live streaming. Justin TV was here a few weeks ago. And can you imagine a battle in Seattle type protest with or without the violence, but with hundreds, if not thousands, of people wearing those kinds of headsets, documenting everything that happens? That's incredibly powerful. And
without the violence, nothing's happening.
Well, what do you mean? There's still people making a lot of noise.
I mean, one of the problems with protests is usually people wave around very cliched signs and are very predictable.
Yeah.
And people have interesting things to say and are doing interesting bits of street theater that's compelling. That might have an impact. But, I mean, most of our culture is looking for entertainment. So, I mean, the whole thing is sort of pointless, isn't it?
Well, on that note.
So I'm afraid we've run out of time.
We've run out of time and interest on this topic.
And I want to thank Jaume Cascio for joining us.
Always happy to be here.
We will be back in 2 weeks.
Love's the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?